I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. And welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. Good to be with you. And we are getting toward the close of summer. Fall will be approaching shortly. And my abode during the summertime is in the Rocky Mountains. And so I'm up, my home is at 7,000 feet, so I'm in the high country. And it's kind of a good place for me and for others to kind of take a look at what's going on. Gives you kind of a big picture perspective, or at least it facilitates the development of a big picture perspective. What's going on in the world today? What's going on in the country? What's happening there? We are being bombarded constantly and unrelentingly with what I would characterize as bad news. Now we have good news, of course. We have something that is neutral. We have bad news, and then finally we have fake news. And so you can sort of like look at that from the from that perspective. We can say, okay, what category does this news fit into? What's the category? And once we categorize it, then it takes on, hopefully, I guess I could say, I believe this is to be true and accurate, it takes on a different level of meaning. It takes on additional characteristics and attributes when we first and foremost categorize whatever information is coming into our senses, and we actually have six senses. We don't have five. We don't have four, three, or two. We have six. So whatever information is coming into our senses, we can, first and foremost, I would suggest, and I found this to be very useful, that we can characterize the information coming in. What category does this fit into? And also in terms of it being truthful and accurate and viable, how can we make some kind of at least some kind of an initial assessment to it in terms of what it looks like? How should we understand it? Another word that I often use is comprehension. Now, I use it in the context of kind of like a deep understanding of things. It's not just a surface treatment. It's a deep understanding of things. It's a way to comprehend things that are not only of interest, but things that are meaningful, things that are serious, things that are mission critical. And comprehension enables us to get into this whole aspect of the mission critical, the things that are seriously important to us, to our organization, to our family, community, and country. What's mission critical? And that probably is, in my way of thinking, and you know, and I've just completed a major video shoot at the Air and Space Museum in Denver. And my way of thinking is, and I've explained this on this video, which will be available soon on our YouTube channel. And oh, by the way, the YouTube channel does. You can find it by typing in Captain Kevin Smith, but also you can find it under its official title, which is Critical Decision Making and Complex Problem Solving Video Channel on YouTube. You can find it there. And we post a number of videos. We have a number of videos up and running right now that deal with various subjects related to that, related to critical thinking. Of course, we are looking at it in terms of the application of critical thinking to the execution of a purposeful activity. A lot of treatments out there don't necessarily go there. They kind of assume that maybe you're engaged in some kind of activity, but is it a purposeful activity, and is it intense, and is it seriously important that you perform this purposeful activity? And so our YouTube channel attempts to address the two key features. This is not the only set of key features, of course, but two key features when you are engaged in a seriously important, purposeful activity. Often we need to consider such things as complex problem solving and critical decision making. All right. So why those two? Isn't the one the same as the other? Why do we have two titles for this YouTube channel? And my answer is, well, they go together and they're important to understand how they fit together. And they fit together this way. Complex problem solving deals with a situation that has occurred that could be described as being complex. And there's a number of ways that we can identify things, objects, or situations, or processes that are complex. There are certain ways for us to do that. So complex problem solving is, in fact, it's a defined area of discipline, put it on no uncertain terms. You have to be, in order to be able to solve complex problems, you have to be able to do it in a way that is appropriate to the situation. In other words, it requires specialized training, and that's pretty much the bottom line here. If you don't have specialized training in complex problem solving, you're just not going to be able to do very well when you are engaged in this activity. Critical decision making is a component of it. If, in fact, the problem is complex and if it is seriously non-linear, and often it is, some is more non-linear than others. Non-linear is a kind of a general term. I wish it was more specific, but we don't really have the right words in place to help us further with that. But I'm working on it. And I'm talking about the verbiage that is typically used. If we're dealing with a situation that is seriously non-linear, we're going to have to, in order for us to choose the right solution, we're going to have to employ critical decision making, or another way of saying that, we're going to have to employ the critical decision making algorithm in order for us to be able to identify the optimum solution among a list of candidate solutions, and the list could be rather extensive, and there's no upper limit, there's no theoretical limit to it. There may be some practical limits to the alternatives, but there isn't. Okay, so I've sort of like wandered around here as I am continuing my discussion. So I wanted to say that, okay, so this is a special edition of Throttle Up. And we are in the midst of another special edition. It's called How to Think. And we, as you know, we often have special editions because we encounter situations where we need to kind of like take a time out, right? Let's take a mental health break from the bombardment of information coming into our senses from various places that are unpleasant. And I'm not suggesting that it is. I am suggesting that it should not be all unpleasant. We also ought to be looking at things that are pleasant, things that are uplifting, and not look at things that are causing us to become downtrodden. And that's a good way to look at it too. You know, is this information, is it uplifting, or does it produce a downtrodden experience, or does that evoke that kind of experience in human consciousness? Often, what happens is, based upon the human's ability to think, often we are dealing with this phenomena that we call human consciousness. And what is it about human consciousness that we ought to know, that we need to know? And I guess I could say it this way too, and I'm sort of like paraphrasing a famous quote by Donald Trump. I'm sorry, And it may very well be President Trump has said this as well. I have misspoken slightly. It's Donald Rumsfeld who came up with this idea first. And it's probably used by others as well. And I suspect President Trump is using it as well. And that's in the realm of human consciousness. How do humans think about things? How should they think about things? And how do they think about things? And so we can look at it from that perspective. We can check ourselves. And that's pretty important here. And that's what this whole show is about. Checking our thinking processes, checking our ability to be consciously aware of something that will lead us down a productive pathway, and to pursue that pathway to achieve meaningful, productive, and useful things, achievement, the achievement pathway to achieve something that is viable, that is productive, that is useful, that benefits all of us. Okay, so where are we going with this? All right, so this is a special edition, How to Think. We're in the midst of it. This is episode, I'm not sure, but my editor will mark this appropriately, but I think it's episode number 9. So we're well into this discussion of how to think. Now, you know, I said this before, and I guess it bears repeating again. Why are we talking about this? Well, we're talking about this because we need to step back. We've heard lots of things going on here, all right? There is all kinds of, you know, jargon-laced descriptions, terms, definitions. I mean, it gets to a point where it's a bit overwhelming. And let me give you some examples. The big jargon right now is artificial intelligence and machine learning. And that's been going on for some time. Autonomous vehicles, autonomous AI systems, you know, lots and lots of stuff in terms of AI and machine learning to address a growing list of autonomous capabilities, autonomous operations, autonomy. The machine is taking over because it is more capable than humans. We want humans out of the loop. We want machines to do a lot of the skills traditionally performed by humans. And then we have, on the human side, we have things like critical thinking, which is really a term that is growing in popularity. Not sure that a lot of people understand what it is, but it sounds good. Critical thinking is out there in a lot of stuff that you read. Other things that relate to that are not quite used as often, but are being used more and more, is complex problem solving. Third in the list is critical decision making. The fourth in the list would be systems thinking. That's kind of like growing in popularity. I'm not sure that people understand exactly what it is, but nevertheless, systems thinking is growing. It's becoming more and more popular, and I think that's a good thing, absolutely. And then after systems thinking, then there is big picture thinking. Yeah, that's also growing in popularity, although there's very, very little that's been done about that in terms of books, articles, or videos. And then last but not least on the list is higher order reasoning. higher order reasoning is probably ought to not be the last on the list. It ought to be, you know, it ought to be on in the top five, if you will, because it, if you are going to deal with something that is intrinsically complex, you cannot deal with that by using normal thinking. Okay, so where am I going with this? Well, the first thing is that how to think, we ought to consider that, and we ought to make our own list of things or aspects of thinking to see how we stack up with what I guess some would say is an optimum way to think. Of course, we have to put it in the context of what is the situation that we are involved in, what kinds of things are we engaged in doing, what is our purpose, are we engaged in the purposeful activity, and if we are, what does it intend to do, what is the objective of performing this particular activity. And then we ought to list things based upon that aspect of reality. We ought to list things in terms of how should I think about things as we perform this particular activity, as we encounter things along the way that may be expected or unexpected, and stuff like that. All right, so we're going to take a quick segue here. We are going to listen to a audio clip. It's about, what is it? It's about 10 minutes long. It's a little bit long in the tooth, I know, but I do think it's important for us to consider what others are considering, I guess you could say that, what others are discussing openly in this whole realm of how to think. This one relates to higher order reasoning. So if that is on our list, let's assume that it is, because as we engage in this purposeful activity, we have or will or expect to encounter something that is complex. It could be a complex operation. It could be a complex problem. It could be a complex environment. All the above. Everything could be complex. We have wandered into a quagmire of complexity, and we are uncertain how to proceed. We are uncertain about what we should be doing, in what kind of a logical sequence should they be done, and so forth and so on. So we're going to listen to this. It's pretty good. It comes from the folks that produce the Systems Innovation series. It is now... typically, these are pretty good. They're kind of dry in their presentations, but they do have useful information. I found that to be a useful source. If you are looking for a really good source of information, I would suggest, and I've often said this before, I would suggest that we consider the book Logic of Failure by Dietrich Dorner. Is a great book. I think that would be the place where I would start. And it really gets right down to the nitty-gritty in terms of how people do think, how they should think, and do those two things line up. In Dietrich Dorner's book, he points out that rarely do they line up. The should versus actual does not coincide with one another, and that produces all kinds of problems going forward. All right, so let's listen to this audio clip, and then we'll discuss it further.
Objective reasoning means reasoning according to a set of logical and objective standards, while subjective thinking refers to reasoning without objective standards. Objective reasoning means reasoning that is independent of the specific subjective context, not influenced by personal characteristics, feelings, or opinions of the subject. An idea can be said to be objective when it's not conditioned by the subject stating it, when it expresses a reality without subjectivity modifying it. Objective thinking implies an impartial and balanced inquiry. In reasoning, one has to define what is of value and relevance, in so doing assign weight to the different factors involved. This assigning of importance to the different factors involved then defines much of the context to the following process of reasoning and its outcomes. When it is done subjectively, an overemphasis is placed on some factors whilst others are diminished depending on the character of the subject doing the reasoning. Objective reasoning implies an impartial, balanced inquiry that applies relevant weight to the different factors involved in the process. This objective view of the world does not come naturally to human beings. In fact, quite the contrary. The biological evolutionary context to our condition originates in a very subjective perspective, one which leads to an imbalance in our worldview. Subjective thinking, in the form of egocentric thinking for example, comes natural to us as humans. We do not have to train people to believe what they want to believe. What one wants to believe is what one will naturally believe. In contrast, people need to be trained or train themselves if they want to believe something other than this. Whereas the subjective thinking of altruism and egoism that we previously talked about leads to an imbalanced emphasis on either the individual or on others, objective thinking strives to overcome this in order to achieve a balanced judgment. Objective thinking represents the capacity to experience phenomena as in some way independent from our subjective condition, to be able to regard other entities as existing in and for themselves, independent of our own will. As this is not an innate feature of human cognition, it involves having to develop a framework based upon some objective logic that can define the value of things independent from their significance and value in relation to one's own agenda and desires. It is only in being able to do this that one can ascribe the appropriate significance to things and thus make a balanced inquiry that is a central part of critical thinking. Objective thinking is only really achieved by creating standards because the results of one's thinking cannot be any better than the quality of the process by which conclusions were reached. With the use of standards, one can develop objective thinking, the placing of an objective value on phenomena. The psychological differentiation of the individual during development is an important part of achieving balanced, objective reasoning. Differentiation during the individual's development means the separation of different spheres, in particular the separation of self from others and other things, so as not to be as psychologically and emotionally attached to them, which results in one placing an over-evaluation on them. This distinction between subjective and objective thinking can be understood as a relationship between a system and its environment. When something is subjective, it is a point of view. It is not based upon some logic within the environment. When thinking is objective, it is true regardless of points of view, as it is based upon the logical set of relations within the environment. If one's ultimate aim is not to adapt and conform one's reasoning to some larger logic within the environment, then the reasoning will inevitably be flawed. Objective reasoning is about following standards that will enable us to develop knowledge that reflects the logic of our environment. It is not so important if one makes a mistake during reasoning, What is important is that we have the framework in place that makes reasoning responsive to some broader environmental context, so that we can identify when our reasoning is misaligned. What is important is that our conceptual system can adapt and change in response to the logic of some broader context. The logic of one's thinking must conform to the logic of the environment for it to be successful, and the objective standards of reasoning create the framework for conforming our reasoning to the logic within our broader environment. A central question in the distinction between objective and subjective thinking is then whether the individual adapts reality to their thinking, or do they accommodate and adapt their thinking to reality. Critical thinking and science aims to create standards so that we accommodate our thinking to the logic of the world around us, and not the other way around, because this is the only effective solution in the long term. Trying to shape reality to fit in to our misconstructed conception of it will only last for a certain period of time, as the conceptual system at some stage will be forced to deal with the reality of its environment. Subjective reasoning leads the individual to conclusions that are in some way desirable to that subject. The world, though, does not always turn out to be how people would like it to be. In fact, it has no regard whatsoever for how people would like it to be, and thus often turns out to be something very different. To accept something that is an undesirable logic requires discipline and living by the standards of reasoning. All thinking by its nature is subjective, but by adhering to standards, we try to achieve greater objectivity in our thinking. Our minds will tend to take a path of least resistance unless we make a specific, high-energy effort to step out of these processes and think in a more clear and logical manner. Cognitive biases of subjective thinking lead us into invalid or fallacious thinking rather than into formal, logical ways of thinking. These biases are numerous, pervasive, and can have a very powerful influence on how we think, and it requires exerting a concerted effort to remove them in the form of applying cognitive standards to our thinking. If one wants to be the best high jumper or the fastest runner, one has to be disciplined in the use and training of one's body in order to gain a certain height or speed advantage. The higher one wants to jump or the faster one wants to run, the more disciplined one will have to be in the training of one's body. And the same is true for thinking. There is the same standards, but this time it's not jumping higher or running faster. It's about being able to use higher levels of abstraction effectively and according to an objective set of rules. One can only do this by structuring the most basic elementary concepts. Once one has these basic building blocks, it is then possible to move up to building more complex and abstract patterns out of these. However, one cannot move up to higher level reasoning until the basic concepts have been formed. If one tries to do this, the reasoning will be flawed, just like building a house out of weak building blocks that will fall apart if we build too high. In order to make the basic building blocks solid, one has to have discipline in their construction so that they are well structured and balanced. What this means, in more practical terms, is that one has to define things properly. Until a concept has been properly defined, it is not possible to use it properly in the building of higher level, more abstract constructs. Thus, we need to employ discipline in our reasoning in order to define things properly. The better we can define things, the more solid our reasoning will be, and we'll be able to build higher, more abstract conceptual systems, which in turn means that we can reason effectively about more complex systems. When we properly define things, we try to get at their most elementary features that define them, as distinct from other entities. Every word in the dictionary is distinct in some way, or else it would not exist. It may be very similar to others, but never exactly the same in all contexts. If one does not use objective standards in reasoning and define things properly, then it will not be possible to see what is the same and what is different, and thus we will form false categories that will not correspond to those within the environment, creating tension and conflict. And we'll pick this theme up again of subjective and objective reasoning in the next module as we talk about motivated reasoning.
Okay, higher order reasoning. Now, my takeaway from this, and I think this is particularly important as we go forward. We need to consider using abstractions. It's a couple of other terms that kind of describe that. We can create an abstraction hierarchy to model a particular set of realities. That's very, very useful. The construction of an abstraction hierarchy is actually extremely important. And I might point out that others, as well as myself, have observed and have reported on that the abstraction hierarchy actually doesn't have to be perfect. The abstraction hierarchy, the value in the abstraction hierarchy is, in fact, its construction. As one is engaged in the process of constructing a abstraction hierarchy, that process reveals certain things that are not all that obvious to us, and it helps us focus our mental energies on things that are important but unusual, not typical, kind of atypical. It helps us engage in and evoke things like innovation and creativity. A out of the box thinking is a key here, as well as others. And so, as we construct our worldview and use this abstraction hierarchy, kind of a superstructure, if you will, that gives us some clarity. Actually, it reveals a lot that is not necessarily clear when we are working at a lower level of abstraction, or we are employing low-level reasoning, higher-order reasoning, and the use of clusters, abstract clustering, and abstract hierarchies is, in fact, one of the most important things that we can do in terms of how to think. And so if we don't typically do that, and this is a good checklist for us, if we don't typically do that, then I would say that we need to go back and consider such things first and foremost. And a short audio clip on systems thinking. Now, system is, in fact, an exercise in higher order reasoning, to think of things in terms of the system that is in place, systems thinking. So here's a short audio clip on systems thinking.
Systems thinking is a way of describing the world in a more holistic manner based upon the model of a system. But let's start from the beginning. We can understand the world as things, that is, parts or components, and their relations, that is, how they are connected or fit together. So take a car, for example. It is made up of parts, car parts, such as engine, wheels, and so on, and these parts are put together or organized in a specific way so as to make them function as a vehicle of transport. Now, we call a group of things that are not organized in this way a set. So we'd call a group of cups on a table a set of cups, because unlike the parts to our car, they have not been designed to serve some collective function. Because the group of cups is simply the sum of its parts, we would describe them by describing the individual properties of each cup, and this would tell us everything we need to know about them. This approach to describing things is called analysis or reductionism. Reductionism is the traditional approach taken within modern science that tries to describe complex phenomena in terms of their individual parts. Now, take the human body that is highly organized through a complex set of relations between its parts. Out of the arrangement of these parts in a specific way, we get the overall functioning of the living organism. Because the parts are so strongly defined by their connections and function within the body as an entirety, to properly describe the parts, we need to first understand the functioning of the whole body. This approach to describing things, that is, that we can best describe things by understanding their place within the functioning of the whole they are a part of, is called synthesis, and synthesis is the foundations of systems thinking. Thus, we have two different approaches to describing things. On the one hand, analysis, that is interested in describing the individual components, and synthesis, that talks about the relationship between these components and their functioning as a whole. Okay, so now that we know a bit about systems thinking, let's put our newfound knowledge to use. Say a car manufacturing company has employed us to design their next great model. Now we could take two different approaches to this problem, applying analytical thinking or our friend's systems thinking. If we approach the problem from a traditional perspective, we would start by analyzing the car and looking for ways to optimize it. We might come away with a design that minimizes the car's drag by reducing its height by a few centimeters to increase its fuel efficiency. Now, if we applied systems thinking to this problem, we would start by identifying the car's function, that is, personal transportation, and the system it is a part of, the transportation system. From this perspective, we might not even need to design a new car at all, but end up designing some service that connects pre-existing resources to provide the same desired functionality. From this example, we can see how systems thinking is often employed when the current paradigm or way of doing things has reached its limit and gives us a fresh perspective on things. Systems thinking is the beginning of another closely related area called systems theory that goes on to give us a whole suite of tools for analyzing and modeling systems and their interaction dynamics as they evolve over time. So we can wrap up by saying that systems thinking is an emerging paradigm within many areas from science to engineering and business management that presents an alternative to our traditional modern analytical methods of inquiry by emphasizing the need for a more holistic and contextualized understanding of the world.
Okay, so a couple of another good short audio clip on this whole area that we call higher order reasoning as a key aspect of how to think. How do we think and how do we do? Thinking and doing and achieving. How do we think, do, and achieve ought to be something that we have always before us, could be part of our diary, our personal diary, and write down things as we, on a daily basis. This is something that I do, and I recommend it. Think, do, and achieve. And those three areas, you know, would be key. And how do we do that? All right, so how do we think in terms of higher order reasoning? And we talked about abstraction hierarchies. We talked about abstract clustering. We talked about thinking in terms of abstractions. That's going up the abstraction ladder, going from the literal to the abstract. And often, if we do that, I would suggest that going from the literal to the abstract is, in fact, a very good way to go. I would highly suggest it. That would be something that I think would be extremely beneficial for us to be able to do that. And so one of the things that I have discovered in my work, and one of the things that I find to be very useful in terms of how to think, and especially in terms of what are the key aspects of higher order reasoning that I should recognize, that I should utilize in the course of performing a purposeful activity. I found it very useful. Of course, you know, you have to look at the particular environment that I was in, but I found it very useful for me and for others to consider such things as in terms of their level of how dangerous is this situation Or another way of saying that is, what is the risk? Can we quantify risk? The official term for that, and I'm not sure who first came up with this. I think probably a number of people, including myself, but the official term for that is operational risk management. And so the key here is when you're out and about, when you are engaged in a purposeful activity, when you are performing an operation, there are certain risks that present themselves, and how do we recognize and how do we deal with such risks? In other words, how do we manage risk? Do we just cease operations anytime a risk presents itself, or do we try to manage it? Do we try to mitigate it? Do we try to keep it from getting worse? There's all kinds of things. Risk mitigation is, of course, another term that we could use. But typically, it's often almost entirely referred to as risk management. And how do we do that? Now, risk is actually a higher order construct, right? Lots of things could be described in terms of their risk factors or terms of their level of risk that we have or may encounter and things like that. And so risk management becomes one of the keys to this thing that we call higher order reasoning within the context of how should I think or how should we think about this particular situation. In other words, how to think. How to think when things become not normal. How to think when things become troubling. How to think when things become mission critical. How to think when things become rather dangerous. And those kinds of things. If we can do that, it's my thesis that we're going to be a lot better off if we can first answer the question of how should I or how should we think during this particular situation that we have encountered. And that would be, I think, one of the keys to success is to be able to answer such a question. Here's the thing that is going to help us in terms of being able to, let's say, understand how we should think, when and how should we engage in higher order reasoning. If the risk posture, if we can at least make some kind of educated guess, or we have some other analytics that we can apply to this question, what is my level of risk right now, or what will be my level of risk in the very short term and in the near future? What is my level of risk? And here we can look at the risk continuum. And the risk continuum would be either low, and it increases, of course, low, moderate, high moderate, high, very high, and extreme. So let me read something out of my book, Critical Thinking Essentials, and I address this. And it based upon the playing field, we need to be able to establish some kind of a frame of reference. Whatever is going on, we need to establish a frame of reference, and that is going to be able enable us to deal with with this whole issue that we are pursuing, which is how to think, or when do we employ higher order reasoning? So let me read this, and then that should be concluding our show for this week. The fact that a particular problem or challenge needs to go through an orientation phase first before entering the solution phase is an important aspect of applied critical thinking, or I might add here, higher order reasoning as well. Conceptualizing the problem with respect to the appropriate playing field is an important step on the way to formulating an optimum solution. Different playing fields are used for different types of problems. These can be organized around levels of risk or particular danger zone categories. These danger zones are, one, extreme. Here's we're going from high to low. Extreme, two, very high, three, high, four, high moderate, five, moderate, and six is low. Experience has shown that in a large number of cases, such as a business failure, major accident, defeat on the battlefield, or failed government programs, the failure can be traced to its root cause. An attempt to apply the right solution to the wrong problem. By right solution, we mean the solution most favored by many, including most of the so-called experts. By wrong problem, we mean that a clear understanding of the problem was lacking because, in part, the appropriate playing field was not used. Instead, a default playing field that intended to support the favored solution was used. This, of course, almost always leads to failure. Okay, that's a quote from my book, Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available in all major book outlets. It is also available in ebook format on Amazon Kindle. So you can get a Kindle version of the book, download it to your favorite device, and you can take it with you. So it's portable, easy to take with you. I would suggest that you download the Kindle version as well as getting the hard copy so that you can take it with you on the job. All right, that completes another Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. Great being here with you. Hopefully this was interesting and helpful as we go about our daily lives and engage in purposeful activities. See you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.